Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with self-love coach Danielle Burnock. Things happen in our lives that make us feel powerless. But Danielle believes that anyone can become a victorious soul by reclaiming what belongs to them, their value, their belovedness, and their God-given superpower. The Victorious Souls Podcast is dedicated to empowering you to rise up, reclaim, and embrace the change from survive to thrive as a victorious soul through the power of love. And now, here's that lady on the internet who loves you, Danielle.
Welcome to the Victorious Souls Podcast with me, your host, Danielle Burnock from DanielleBurnock.com, that lady on the internet who loves you, connecting you to the love that heals so you can love yourself from survive to thrive. Today, I have with me on the show, Amard Vital. He is a motivational consultant, an international speaker, author, humanitarian, and teen ministry leader. He is a man who has overcome so much. I can't wait to get into all of it. I was just telling him before we started. He's grown in his faith and he has such a heart to serve. So thank you for being with me today, Amard.
Thank you for having me on.
I'm really excited to get into your story because I was reviewing it this morning and wanted to start with your childhood. You called your childhood good, but rough. Can you unpack that for us, how it was good and it was rough at the same time?
Absolutely. And, I came up in a loving home, born to two awesome, amazing parents. But we always know that, you know, things don't always work out. My father was a petroleum engineer, so he was gone a lot, very much so a pioneer in that regard. So he'd be home three or four times a year, sometimes up to five, and he'd be home for like a week at a time. And early on, I was like, okay, I'm trying to understand this but I'm not really getting it. And obviously there were some times when I'm like, what are we doing here? And so obviously up around 11 or 12, there was the breaking point and my mother and father split. Mm-hmm. The beautiful thing is that my mother remarried pretty quickly. I don't have the exact time on when that was. That was somewhere between 10 and 12, but she did remarry. And so I always say that I have two fathers. It's not a step in biological. I have two fathers. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just one of those situations. I mean, all three of my parents are educated people. But the beautiful thing about my fathers is no matter which one I had, neither one of them dealt with excuses. They were not that, like, I tell people, I was like, I couldn't be entitled if I wanted to, because there was just no room for that. They didn't allow for that. I couldn't come home and say the teacher didn't like me, coach is getting on to me or whatever. And they were just like, yeah, whatever, go back to work. And so the rough part was that, you know, between wondering why my biological father was doing one thing, my second father was doing this, and it's strict and we're trying to figure these things out. And so there was some rough times, but at the end of the day, it took me a while to figure it out. It's like, they really, truly did love me. But the way it was shown was like, yes, we're doing trial by fire. You are going to learn this in a whole different way. Financially, we went from up to down to up. And all of those things were very painful coming up. But I learned probably about 14, 15 years old. And like, this is creating something in me. Even then, this is creating something in me that I cannot quantify. But I know one thing. I am, from a professional standpoint, I'm mentally tougher than probably almost all my peers. You know, I'm up there, you know, taking care of real life business at like 15, 16 years old. You know, I bought several cars of mine before I turned the age of 25. And so like all these different things came together for the good. And so I'm grateful for the fact that the struggle has put me in a position to where there's not much that can happen today that I haven't been beat up from when I was in my adolescent stage.
Wow. But it sounds like you started your story with, I had a loving family, and love heals and love mitigates trauma. So even though your parents were hard on you, so to speak, like you said, trial by fire, the knowledge that you were loved empowered you to internalize that in a very powerful and positive way. That's amazing.
Well, I wish I could say I got it the first time. I didn't. Obviously, I was I did have some anger management issues that I've taken all the way into adulthood on certain situations. And, you know, it takes sometimes things have to come full circle. You know, your dad did this to you, your mom told you this, and it's just like both of them are out of line, and you know, you're banished and you're off of the island. And then you start living life and you're just like, oh, this is the same scenario my parents were in, and I made this choice and it didn't turn out well either. So now you have the context of, oh yeah, this thing called life is pretty rough. Maybe this is time to have a little bit of grace with your people. And so I'm glad that things have come full circle. And, you know, at every stage in life, you learn some new things. And it's like, you know, I tell people, like, my father and I have like the greatest relationship now that I'm in my 40s. But like, it was in and out, all the way from like 12 years old to the present. But it's like beautiful. And it's like, and I wouldn't trade not a single second of it for where we are today, you know, like, because at the end of the day, and I, especially for a young man, you want a closeness with your father. Mm-hmm. That's anyone can say whatever they want. A young man wants the validation and love of his father, period, end of story. And even though in and out, and you know, I lost one father and here's, you know, this and that. It's like, at the end of the day, you always just like, dad, are you proud of me? Mm-hmm. And that's what you, and that's what you want. And young ladies want it too. They want their father to lean in and say, I love you, sweetheart, and I am proud of you. That is something that is very much so needed and wanted. And I think that that's a lot of what's going on now. It's a lot of crying out for wondering if your parents love you. If I'm looking at things from a holistic standpoint, like, people are trying to think so many different ways about this. I'm like, it's the breakdown of the home. It's the breakdown of, where are both of my parents? Right? Where are both of them, so that I can have that the way God created it, to have both of us in the home, to be able to lean on each other and bring up and rear the children in a way to where they can go be productive adults. When you break any of that up, we have a problem. And thus we see what 40, 50, 60 years of that is looking like right now.
Yeah. How did this affect your early adulthood, being raised in that environment? How did that affect you when you, you know, went to college or graduated high school, just became a young adult?
It turned me into a hustler. That's what it really did, because I'd gotten to the point where it's just like, okay, let me see. So at the age of 15, I'm old enough to work. I see the financial situation going on around here. Why don't I go ahead and hit the streets and make and go in here and start making some money? And so it put a work ethic in me that, like, it's still around today, that I had very, very, very early on, because, you know, we went from the really, really highs to somewhere in the middle, and then we hit sort of close to rock bottom. And so, you know, we're in a house with five or six of us in the house. And it's like, we're all doing this on a teacher salary. And I'm like, okay, this is not looking so good, because, you know, some changes had happened. The economy had switched up. You know, my father was trying to find some work, but I learned something early on, that there's such thing as overqualified. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that was a thing until you're in the house, and it's just like, he's applying everywhere and they're like, you're just overqualified. It's like, wait a minute. Isn't that a good thing? Shouldn't you bring him on to, like, he's saying, I'll take the pay cut. I just want to go to work. And that situation happened for a long time. And basically from, let's say, the back half of middle school all the way through my second year of college, that was the financial situation. Wow. I have two younger brothers and an older sister. So do the math there. School teacher, taking care of all of that. So what it did is I internalized that, and it built up a fire in me to where I was working one or two jobs pretty much every year from like 16, 17, all the way through the present. And so I look at that as such a blessing. You know, your folks look and say, man, I hate that you have to work that hard. No, please don't apologize. That is the greatest gift I could have ever been given, is to understand that, like, I can control certain things in my life. I lean on this, I go create this, and boom, here's what's happening. You know, because even when I bought the house I'm sitting in right now at 29, I didn't even tell my parents. I just brought them by and said, look what your son did. And they're just like, how did you do this? You created this. And I thank you all for it. And I love you all for what you provided for me, even though obviously it's hard for a parent to see it that way, but they do like the end results. And that's what it created in me as a young adult. It's like, now I'm just Like, I don't sit around waiting for things to happen. I'm like, okay, what skills do I have and how can I monetize this and make this happen? So,
wow, that's awesome. But in there, after your that time when you were this great hustler and you bought your house and you went through some really dark times then, what happened with that? You shared with me a number of things. Were they happening all at the same time, the thing with your dad and your marriage and the other things, or were they spaced out? How did that all happen?
They were spaced out, because obviously when I bought the house, I was dating a woman and, you know, 29, 30 years old, you know, it's the first relationship I took serious. And so I'm like, all right, let me see how this works, you know? And I really leaned in on it. And I'd been in this house maybe 3 weeks, a month. And she just called me out of nowhere and said, this is over. I'm like, okay, let's talk about this. It's like, no, there's nothing to talk about. This is over. And I'm like, I don't even get an explanation. No. So obviously I went into a downward spiral and, you know, a lot of things happened. Depression kicked in and, you know, I'm getting all these headaches and all of this stuff like that. And it was just a bad time because, like, why didn't I even get the explanation? And so, you know, I always say that I had that conversation. I was in my guest bedroom and I had that conversation with God. And I said, you know, God, whatever I'm doing is not working. And by that time, that's the American dream, right? I had a job. I had a side hustle. I was working for Fox. I was on TV, you know, almost every week during the fall. Like, I'm living it up. I had a pretty near new vehicle. Like, I'm 29 years old and I'm living this life, yet I'm sitting in my guest bedroom, you know, weeping. And so I was like, all right, God, I'm not doing so well with this. You know, you blessed me, but, you know, how about this? If you wake me up tomorrow, you know, I'll try your way because mine isn't working. And of course I did. And, you know, that's when Awaken the Baller Within was born from that. Because I had a love for sports, but I also had a mentor. I've gotten into the Bible a lot more. I'm reading books like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. I'm reading Richest Man in Babylon. I'm reading Who Moved My Cheese, all the books that you need to be able to move your life forward. And so I merged the two and wrote a book that was basically talking about how the mental attitude of athletes brings their success. Even though they're talented, there's something more than just having a talent, because we see talented guys fall all the time. So that was the whole study. It was a mental book that just used sports, football, as a metaphor for life, which a lot of parents had bought into that. And so that was probably round one of the tragedies. And then, of course, you know, the divorce that happened years later with my now ex, that was a very painful, extremely, extremely painful time, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. I was broken. I just lost, you know, I lost my opportunities with Fox. So you're talking about 65% of my income gone. The police put me out of the house, even though I called them to, because I was aggressed and I'm sitting on my porch locked out of my house. And so I was put out to not be allowed to come back in at that time. So I just sort of went through unpacking of all sorts of things of life. And that's when, you know, the 22 happened. I had the revelatory moment in my backyard, and that built up, that really kind of reinvigorated my love of service and my love of gratitude during that time, because I didn't have any answers. And, you know, I talked to God and I was like, God, we're back at that spot again. It's not the same thing, but it's like, you have an answer for me. Because, you know, I used to always jokingly say during that year where I did those speaking engagements, I would pay all my expenses. Cause remember, I'm still paying for this house and the expenses, and I can't stay here. So that means I got to pay for be somewhere else. 65% of my income is gone, and I'd pay all my expenses and there'd be $8.27 left in my account every month.
Well, you said your income was gone. What I'd missed that of where 65% of your income was gone. What income was that was lost?
That was the Fox income. I was no longer doing the Fox work anymore because that takes, I mean, you're talking, I'm writing 50, 60 articles a month. I can't do that when I don't even know where I'm sleeping at night. And there was some mismanagement going on with the organizational wing of where I was working for, that it sort of was starting to fall apart along the way anyways. And so we had all had to kind of pivot and go different places because that segment of our company went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So like, it was just a perfect storm of everything that could possibly go wrong.
Wow.
And so I'm, you know, I'm bereft of that income. and I'm going through a divorce, and I can't even stay in my own home, yet I still have to pay for the home and the expenses.
Wow.
And that was part of it. And I was just like, that's when I started to realize, like, man, this system that's around this is pretty, I'm not a fairness kind of guy. I was like, this is pretty hard of the pendulum swinging like towards unfairness that I've ever heard of. Because I had never seen it at this level before because I'd never been there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, let's just say the good Lord had plans for me that I didn't know about. And again, another great blessing that happened in my life, even though mentally and spiritually, it probably dang near killed me because I was even to the point where I was going to my doctor and like my body was in total, you know, shock mode all the time.
Yeah. Can I ask what happened to your marriage? Was it there domestic abuse in there from her, or did you just arguing, or I mean, only share what you are comfortable sharing?
No, you know, I'm pretty open here. And again, I take responsibility for the fact that I was part of it. I felt like the woman whom I had married was no longer there. There were just certain things. I mean, because I'm a pretty intense guy. And most people who've been around me for more than 5 minutes know that, like, I'm really intense. I'm very intentional about my work. I'm going to stay hustling. I'm a big quality over quantity guy. So I may be gone a lot, but when we're doing something, I'm leaning in and we're all in on that. It just may not be as much, which for your audience out there who are high performers, that's the life that they live, right? Like, he's not going to make every baseball game. She's not going to make every recital. She's doing some great and amazing things. But when you're there for your children, when you're there for your family, like, you're all present, but there's an understanding that, like, you're going to fight a major battle. CEOs, VPs, you know, people who run these major companies, they're around as much as they can, but they're running very big operations. And so that's kind of where I was. And I just felt her giving me a lot of friction with that. And then there were some other physical things that were going on, some verbiage that just didn't sit well within my spirit. And then it was one day I snapped, but not in a way of like aggressiveness. I was just like, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. And that lit a flame under the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always an aggressiveness coming from that side, but it went from like zero to like 75.
Mm-hmm.
And so abuse of the mental and physical situation was happening. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, well, if you weren't doing this, I wouldn't do this to you. Is the result of it, if that makes sense. And that's where we had sort of gotten to the point where we were just pulling apart, and I was trying to do things a certain way as far as, you know, resolving this and getting out of this situation. And then it just got to the point where I had to go because, you know, I have actual scars. I'm not talking about mental scars. I'm talking about physical scars still to this day on my body that were a part of that. And I understand people get upset. I understand sometimes you might be a little out of character, but to the point where I didn't think that someone who I had, you know, took the vows and devoted my life to could get to the point where this level of anger and this level of expression could even happen. Like, well, if you want to do this, I want to do this. I was like, I didn't think that this would be a possibility. And again, I take responsibility for the fact that maybe I wasn't so bubbly. Maybe I was a bit disconnected. You know, I was working different businesses. I was writing books, and, you know, I was trying to, you know, stack up and do the successful thing. And maybe I wasn't as great of a husband or whatever. I take responsibility for that. I just didn't think that the end result would end up the way it was. But I don't 100% blame, you know, my ex-spouse for 100% of this. I don't. Because I know that I could have done better. I can look in the mirror objectively and say, yeah, you probably could have not taken that gig. You probably could have been more leaning in over here. Or you could have listened more. I still didn't think that the end result would end up the way it did. And so,
well, you can only take ownership for your side, which is, you know, you're doing that. You can only take ownership for your own side. You can't take ownership for the other people's side. If someone says, I did this because you did that, they're putting their ownership on you, which is not right. You know, how you responded, and maybe it was antagonistic, I don't know. But still, their choices are theirs and your choices are yours. So how old were you when this took place? Was this before what happened with your dad or was it after?
So when my father passed, I was engaged to that woman because he was supposed to sing at our wedding. And he died 6 months before we, 7 months before we got married, because he died the night after my 33rd birthday. And so that was pretty rough with that situation. So yes, I was engaged at that time.
Oh, and I bet that played a big part of that whole story, the grief of that, of losing your dad. That has an effect on people. Our grief affects us. So that's something to factor into the equation at the same time. So how did you deal with your dad's death? And then how did you get through that and get through to the other side of these darkness, the divorce and the loss and the wrestling with yourself and the loss of your dad?
Well, the initial loss of my dad, the revelation, the conversation with God happened the night it happened, like at the hospital, you know, going in there and seeing what I thought I asked God for, you know, he had other plans, you know, because my request, my prayer was for my dad to walk out of there. And the way that sort of breaks down, I walk in there and I look in, the nurse is like, there's about a 4% chance your dad's going to make it. And so I'm so spiritually arrogant that I'm like, oh, that's all I need. All I need is to be above one. I'm good. You know? And so I hustle everybody up and I'm like, hey, you know, our dad's going to walk out of here. You know, we need to be on the same page. And of course, you know, the percentages are going down. It's not starting at a high place anyway, but the percentage is going down. And I remember going up and looking at my father in that spot. And I looked down at him and it was like, at that time, I felt like my dad wasn't there. Mm. And it was like the reality of my prayers. Like I was like, my prayer's not going, maybe it's not going to be answered here. And it rocked me. And I remember when it was around that time where it's just like, the nurse was like, hey, your dad is only going to be alive because of this machine. And so my mom was like, I don't know what to do. What are we going to do? And I looked over at my father and I was like, it's not how my father operates. He's the strongest man I know. And there's no way he wants to be kept alive by machines. Not a chance. I was like, turn that machine off and you let my dad fight. And we'll let God take care of the rest. Mm. And my dad fought for 4 hours. And wow. Then it was over. I think it was like 4:45. Of course, at this time, I'm grateful because my dad showed some resiliency in that spot. I don't know what was all going on with him, but he stayed alive sometime. But I do at the same time, I was pissed off. And that's when I went outside and I'm screaming at God. I'm just like, what, did you not hear me? You know, never leave nor forsake me. You'll always be there. Like, where's that? Like, I'm like, you let me down, Dad. You took my, like, what are we doing? And so.
That's such normal grief. That's such normal grief for us to lash out like that. You know, and God can take it. He's got big shoulders. He like, you know, he lets you calm down, says, okay, you know, now that you realize you're not God and I am. So
exactly. But I was on some, I was on the, hey, I made a request and like, you didn't, did you not hear me? Or what was, I thought like you hear everything, you know everything. So like, what's up? What happened here? Like, were you not present? Did you not just see what happened? And so I remember the, you know, as I'm sweating, tears are just all mixed together. I remember hearing the voice, the calming voice of saying, you asked for your father to walk out of here and I have granted you this and he's going to walk out of here as you. He's giving you everything you need. He's giving you the integrity. He's giving you the work ethic. He's giving you the values. He's giving you all that you need. Now, what I need you to do is basically, you know, wipe your face off. Go in there and be the man and leader that I and your father has called you to be. And it was like a mental freight train just like smacked me in the face. Wow. And of course, that really built in me something new in that moment. And whereas I still went into some other roller coasters along the way, that that helped me look at death differently. That helped me look at life differently. That helped me deal, look at faith differently as well. Like everything sort of came full circle from that. And though I had, you know, spiritually, I still had some other things that I didn't know I needed to work out. That was the one of the first time where I say, you know, he does make all things for the good, because I didn't think that I could carry on, because my father was sort of my moral barometer. I could call him all times of day. He was retired his last 3 years. And anytime I called him, any time of the day, he'd pick up. So if I had a situation, I could call my father. And I'm like, okay, that's gone. What am I supposed to do? Like, that's always been a resource for me. And so that made me grow up very quick. It made me kind of expedite the manhood that probably should have already been there. But, you know, how do you know what you don't know until you don't know that you need?
Exactly.
You know? And so that was a beautiful moment for me. And I look at my father's death as a great blessing to me. He made a difference in so many people's lives. You know, his artwork still dons my room. It's still in books. It's still in museums. Still one of the greatest artists to ever walk this planet. And so the fact that I can hold on to that legacy and look at the works he's done and the lives he changed, for me, that's a win. And he's still here. He's still here because the essence and what he gave me is still here. Now it's my job to make sure and share the light he gave me, that God gave him, to pass on to me to be able to make things happen.
That's awesome. That is very beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I wanted to ask you, you touched on it a little bit, all that speaking. You had lined up 22 speaking things. How did you do that, and where were they at? And when you do your speaking, because you're an international speaker still, what do you speak about? But start with those 22. How did you line up 22? And then were they all in 1 year, or, you know?
So I think that would have been, I think it was 2017, I think. Like some of that those late 20s before 2020, that's a little bit of a blur. But, you know, when you get rocked and you lose 65% of your income and you're trying to figure out, because you're displaced from your house, and it's like, there's no stability. So that's when I came up with one of the concepts I had called Two Goals to Go. Basically, I don't have the stability to come out with a business plan. I don't have the stability to come out with goals for the year, because I don't know where I'm going to be living next week. And so I would do what's called Two Goals to Go. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd be like, all right, what's my goals for today? We'll deal with tomorrow and goals today. And I remember one day I was sitting in my backyard right before I got displaced from here. And I said, God, you know, I'm struggling. I got nothing. And I was like, what do you want me to do? And he was like, I gave you something. I gave you a voice and I want you to serve. And I'm like, I don't have the resources. Like, what do you want me to do? I want you to serve. And there was a coach's name who popped up. He was part of a school out here in the North Houston area. And it was like one of those schools where it's like real bad socioeconomically, bad grades everywhere. But I'd known him from a stop before, and he took on that job. It was like a really heavy, burdensome job, because, I mean, like, it's pretty rough there. And I called him one day and I said, Coach, I said, I don't even know 100% why I'm calling you. But I was like, I just had a conversation with God. And for whatever reason, I'm called to come give you my entire program, a keynote, leadership, everything. And it costs you nothing. All I need you to do is say yes. And he's just like, I guess, yes. I thank you for doing this. Like, you're talking about your whole package. Yes. Everything I offer, all of it. And we're doing it. I said, the only thing I ask is that you let me video it and you give me a testimonial at the end and possibly a referral. And he was like, yeah, that's easy. I can do that. I did that first speaking engagement. And I remember, because I still had some battle wounds on my arms. And I remember going into that talk and I was just like, I was so charged up because I didn't know what to do with my emotions. It was all over the place. And I remember speaking there, and I spoke at a spiritual center I used to frequent back in the day. And I came up to do that one. Between those two, that was the turning point for everything. Because I talked to my mentor, I said, as long as I don't lose money, if somebody wants me to come speak for them, I'm going to say yes. So I did a whole year of doing speaking engagements, and they would only pay my travel fees. Like that was it. Like just pay for me to get there, and I'll take care of everything else. I traveled to Mount Pleasant. I traveled all over East Texas. I was traveling all over the place, and I was still keeping my same principles of you book me to speak, and I do a free community service gig while I'm in your city. I've been doing that for many years now, and I remember going through and doing that, and I would be open. And I remember the first time I went and spoke at a coworker of mine. She was at a church and they had a teen group, and she wanted me to come speak to the teen group. Probably 15 kids in the room, and I spoke to them. And then when I was done, the guy gave me a card, a certificate, and it had a gift card in it for $25. And I was just like, okay, I didn't ask for this, but I took that $25 and gave it to the gentleman who was letting me stay in his house rent free. He took that gift card and gave it to the next door neighbor whose daughter had graduated. And then that's when I started realizing, I was like, okay, this is God in action. And so I leaned in. And so I'm just going all over the place. And next thing you know, what ended up happening is I ended up getting 22 speaking engagements, and like seven or eight of them were paid, but I didn't ask to be paid. And so that principle of being a servant first was one of the greatest, and it happened at the lowest time. I'm still paying these expenses. I'm still paying my taxes. And I'm just like, ooh, these margins are getting tight, right? Because when I got put out of my house, I literally, when I left this place, because it was so tense and getting out of here, I had the cops bring me by here, and I grabbed, in 15 minutes, I grabbed everything I would need for my life for the next however long I needed. I grabbed like one pair of jeans, two or three pairs of shoes, some workout clothes, and this and that, and a whole lot of I got to figure it out. And I took my computer and I rebuilt my life with basically three outfits and no money. So I would go get one shirt at a time, one pair of slacks, one jean, and so all of that stuff. So that 22 speaking engagements literally lit a fire in me. And that, because of that, it led me to hiring someone to help with my social media, who led me to finding a woman who was running the business aspect of the royal family of Dubai to find me in Texas. It doesn't make sense. It's only God, because I still to this day wonder, like, how did I find her and how did she find me? But here we are. And so it's amazing. I'm grateful that God chose me for so many different things that not only do I not deserve it, I have no clue how they would happen. And it's still even happening to this day of the wonders and the things he can do. But those 22 was almost like a test from God to say, I want you to go out and change lives. And I don't need you to worry about how you're going to be taken care of, because I am the great provider. And I leaned in on that, and I still keep those same principles to today, because that $8.27 left over is still a great benchmark to know where we've come from and where we're going.
Wow. Yeah, I love those God things. Those, how did that happen? How did they find me? How did they? I love those things. It's just so cool when God makes himself so evident because it's bizarre. I love that. Love that. And you have three books. Tell us about your books. Your newest one is called Now What?
Yes. Now What? Five Steps to Get Up and Create the Most of Life was written in the summer of 2020. You may have been around. There may have been a few things that happened. Maybe your audience knew of anything I'm doing. Maybe just a couple, you know? I mean, the world was sort of going through some things.
Yeah, a little
And think
bit.
about it.
Exactly. We've divided history now into pre-pandemic and post-pandemic.
Like, goodness gracious, like it's like when the whole two when the whole Y2K thing happened, and it was just like, oh my goodness, the whole time structure is about to crash. It's just like, what are we doing, you know? But 2020 was major. I mean, it was major spiritually, politically, socially, culturally, and all those things. And I remember driving down the tollway here in Houston, and the conversations that was going on around that, regardless of where your people stand politically, I could care less. But it's like, I just got tired of the you're owed something conversation. I've had enough. You owe me for this. You know, I'm due this. I deserve this. I want this. And it's like, where did earning go? What happened? Where did earning go? I just got so tired of it. And I literally wrote the outline for Now What on a note on a work notepad while driving on the highway. By the way, people, don't drive and write. It's not a great thing to do. However, I'm a writer and ideas always hit me when I'm on the road. And I keep a pad very close to me. So I am
why don't you record it? You can speak to it and watch where you're going.
You know, Danielle, I totally agree with you. And I've literally heard that line right there for 15 years. But when I tell you that I am a pen to pad guy, to me, I speak through pen and pad. I'm not saying I can't record things. What I'm saying is the greatness and the blessing I have comes from me putting a pen to the pad.
My concern was just while you're driving, that's all. Because I want you to get there and I don't want anyone else to be a casualty.
True. And luckily that has never happened. And God must be blessing me with that as well. It doesn't happen often, but it does hit me. And it's like, got to get it down. So that's why I like there's like 900 notepads around me. You're even sitting right here right now. But I wanted to say, because I was hearing a lot of complaints and I had... I didn't realize I was doing profiles on people while I was going, because I have classmates, I've had people I went to college with, and just people in my life, whether it's at the gym, whether it's, you know, at different schools I visit. And I was always hearing these like worst case scenario stories. And I remember hearing one day, and I was just like, you know, me doing some coaching and things of that nature. And I'm sitting there listening to this and I'm like, God, I'm gonna need your help, because I don't even know where to start to fix this mess. So I said, you know, give me a message. And so Now What was created from that, to where five steps we can get you from, I'm talking about the depths of the depths. I'm talking about whether it's legal issues, you've been in and out of jail, you started your family in a way where it's not advantageous to you because you can't afford the amount of, you know, dependence you have around you, a bad divorce, your business went belly up, you know, you're dealing with, you know, different scenarios. Like, I'm talking about those scenarios where it's just like, I have no answers. And so Now What focuses on five key areas to be able to bring you to from start to finish. And it starts with reflection. It starts with the idea of looking around and saying, you know what, I got a mess here. You know, there's a pile of dirty clothes in the living room. There's a fire going on in the kitchen. There's four kids screaming, they hate me, in the other room. And by the way, I'm about to get foreclosed on. So where we go from here? And so you look at the mess that's around you. And one of the greatest things that I was able to come up with, and I came up with it around the time when my father died, was called the What's Good Here exercise. What's good here is the idea that I want you to have a pity party. Somebody I was talking about with the ladies, they'll bring the girls over, they'll get cheap wine and talk about it. Guys will go shoot pool and be like, hey man, let me tell you how bad my life is. So we have a full pity party. And you write down on the left side of a piece of paper, like all the ways where your life is terrible. Everything. And I want you to like not hold back. I want you to get all of it out. Everything. Whether it's valid or not, you think it is. Get it out. And then I want you to sit that pad away for at least 4 hours on a minimum, but possibly a full day. Go about your day not even thinking about the pad. Then when you come back, I want you to pray over the pad. Pray, meditate, sit still, just be quiet and sit with the pad. On the other side of that line, I want you to write why what you wrote on the left side was actually a blessing for you. What was created because you think that that was so bad? Because one or two things are going to happen. Either you're going to look at that and find it like, yeah, I was able to get a new job. It forced me to have to budget better or something. Or you're going to look over there and like, why am I still thinking about this person and they've been out of my life for 10 years? Why am I still holding on to this? And so then you bless it and you scratch it out. So the what's good here allows you to see things from a totally different perspective. And once we have that, then we can go into phase two, which is to decide. Okay, we see where the junk is. We see where the pile of clothes is. All right, what decision are we going to make? Are we going to wash the clothes? Are we going to throw them out? What are we going to do with all of these fires that we need to put out? We need to decide, what do I want to do? This isn't working. What do I want to do? And so you go through and you start analyzing, like, hey, I'd really like to start a podcast. I'd really like to write a book. I'd really like to change careers. I'd really like to start a family, whatever that looks like for you. And then, of course, after that, you decide, put it down on plain paper so you can run with it. Now it's time to plan your mind maps, your business plan, working through all of the, okay, I want to be an HVAC. I want to be in the HVAC business. Okay, does it require education? Does it require some certifications? Is there going to be some resources needed to be able to do this? All that goes through the planning phase, and you get all of that laid out. Like, all right, we take the big goal and we drop it down and work in reverse. What can I do every day to bring me to that goal? And how long is it going to take for me to get there? Magnify, quantify, justify, all of those things going through the goals process. Then, of course, you take off running. It's time to go. It's time to act. And of course, people say, well, I wasn't ready. You'll never be ready. In fact, whatever you planned out is not going to happen the way you wrote it out. Just the way it is. You've started businesses. You run a podcast. The best laid plans not only often go awry, always go awry for the most part. Like, anything that you first put down is going to be altered so many times because life happens. And you don't find out some things until you run into that roadblock, get caught in a bear trap, get bitten by every insect known to man, and fall out of trees. That's just how this works. We know this. But you still have to act and move through it, and you learn along the way. Marketing and business plans only as good as your audibles, your change up, and things of that nature. And of course, the last one, and I feel like is the most important of the five-step process, is to seek. And this is seeking counsel. Man is not meant to be lived alone. Life is not meant to be done alone. You need people. Anytime someone says, I'm a one-man show and I did this on my own, is lying. You are not telling the truth, because you need people. You need community. And I've been working on some commentary around that since I wrote the book of, you know, who's in your council? Who's on your board of directors? Maybe, you know, I know when corporations have the board of directors, but you as an individual, regardless if you start a business or not, you need your own board of directors. You need a minimum of three people in your life, right? Who can pour into you, who can provide services for you, whom you can connect with, right? And who would you say needs to be those three people? One needs to be like a mentor, an accountability ally, somebody who you can write your goals down to, hand it to them and say, hold me accountable for this, right? Step one through three, like where, so that they can look down and say, hey, you know, every week, every month, whatever your check system is, it doesn't really matter, but can be like, hey, where are we on goal number three? Or have you made some progress towards this? And if you don't, they check you for it. They properly reprimand you for it. You know, you don't want a yes person in this position. You want somebody who's going to properly check you and tell you that the Danielle I know is not doing this in the way that she said that she was going to do it. So where are we on this? You want some accountability. You want somebody to lean in on you. Then I think you need what I like to call the expert. Whatever business you're trying to go into, whatever profession or whatever you're trying to do, who's the expert in that? Like, who can you go be an apprentice for? Who you can lean in on? The person who knows so much about this industry, so much about this occupation, so much about this job, to where you lean in on them and say, all right, teach me the way, right? And I would say that would be the second person. And the third person, someone who's going to hold you from a moral standpoint, even though your mentor is going to be that. But I'm talking about someone who can be your baseline for morality. And what I mean by that is, you know, you're looking at a pastor, a minister, someone who's a staunch believer in the goodness of God, who, like, hey, what you're doing is not illegal, but it's probably not a good idea to do this, because this is not bad for people around you. You know, someone who you can bounce some ideas off of and say, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. It's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing that, but it's kind of in bad taste. So you want someone who's going to kind of keep that, I don't want to say the moral barometer, but sort of a moral barometer, to where you know that, like, you're doing this and it's in good faith and it's something that'll be beneficial for others, to where you don't think about yourself, to where you develop some altruism, right? To where you become that servant leader. You want that kind of person in your life who can hold all those things together. And so I would highly suggest that your people have their own board of directors around them who can just keep them in a place to where they're doing and they're progressing in life, but it's never at the expense of others, to where you're serving first and asking what you can get later, where you're giving of yourself, to where love, gratitude, service, and impact is the leader of your life, not what's in it for me.
Right.
So
that's important. So before we tie this up, is there something you want to make sure that you get to tell our listeners that you're like, I just want to leave you with this thought today?
You know, there's so many things. And like you said, we could unload and have so much. But I think I'll leave your people before we go into, you know, the connections and all those other things. My father, who's still with me, he told me a quote when I was very young, and I've never forgotten it. And I want to share it with your people as we talk about being a servant leader and being someone who stands for something. He said to live the best life you can, then give it all away.
Wow.
Live the best life you can, then give it all away. For whatever reason, of all the things, and I was young, how I remember that of all the things, I don't know. But it makes so much sense. What are you doing to make life for your family and life for those around you better? Do you wake up saying, whom can I serve, as opposed to what can I get? I think when you get to the point where your life is driven by gratitude, servanthood, giving, altruism, when you get to the point where you are living a life that says that this is not about me, that's when life changed. That's when life changed for me. Life changed for me when I realized that the game of life is not about me. It's about me serving it's about me serving something greater than myself. God put me on earth to do this. God called me here to do this, right? And so that's where I've chosen to use that service, mainly for young people, mainly for the youth, mainly for that teenager through 28-year-olds, right? I want to be a resource for them. Why? Because I want to build a bridge to future generations. Why? Because if you don't build a bridge to future generations, we have no future, right? Mm-hmm. What I want to do is I want to create more versions of me so that when I leave here, that there's a duplication of what I represented here on earth, right? And I want them to go do that. I want there to be a bunch of Timothys around here, right? I want there to be some Davids, right? Mm-hmm. I want there to be that structure in place to where maybe we can just leave the world a little bit better than when we got here. And so I want people to have that mindset and that attitude. And when you do that, it will change your family. It will change your business. It will change your outlook. It will change your physical health and your mental health. When you say, hey, I'm here, God, use me. Isaiah, send me. And so those types of things are going to be what are going to take us into the future. And the beautiful thing is, it's a great opportunity because the world has gone completely crazy right now. So if you want to get into the game, like this is the people say, oh, is this the best time to be alive? Yes, right now is the greatest time to be alive because there's opportunity. You know, there's whether it's a revival, whether it's whatever you want to call it, there is about to be a major push and it's going to come from our young people. And I'm here for it, right? And I'm grateful to where I can see signs that like this is not going to continue to perpetuity. It'll always be around, but you're going to see a rising up of righteous youngsters. And you know what? The fact that I can be like, hey, if there's anything I can do, if there's anything I can pour into you to make this help this work out for you, I'm here for it. And so I'm grateful for the fact that this level of servanthood is going on right now. And I want to be the leader in that and showing young people that way. And so living the best life you can and giving it all away, it's sort of the backdrop for all of that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So how can people connect with you if they want to hire you to speak, or where can they get your books? Are you on social media? How can people connect with you?
So I'm on all the platforms. It's Ahmad Vital, ahmadvital.com. That's ahmardvital.com. That's the hub for everything. The books are there. Merchandise is there. Booking info is there. There's some resources from video standpoint there as well. The Now What is available on all the platforms. I think my publisher told me it's on 33 different book sites. So whichever one is your favorite, we'd like for you to go ahead and pick one of those copies up. I would love to get your thoughts on that. In the meantime, my publisher has made a digital copy available to your audience. Go to booknowwhat.com. That's booknowwhat.com. Get a free digital copy. Check it out. Hopefully you'll patronize us and get your own actual copy and do that. And I would also like to offer something to your people, Danielle, as as an advocate for young people. I do believe that's my calling. In fact, I almost basically know it is my calling to work with young people. And so if you have someone out there who's got a teen or young adult and it's been a season for them, you know, they, you know, kind of going through it, depressed, anxiety, or just having a hard time figuring out how they want to go into college, come out of college, and just don't know what to do with the skills they have. I'm offering your audience a 30-minute discovery session, coaching session on my end. Just, you know, just put Victoria Souls in the subject line, info@ahmadvital.com. And we'll set up that discovery call to where, you know, if you got that pile of dirty clothes in the front room, let's at least be able to sift through it and see if we can find some diamonds in there. See if we can find some cleanness in there so we can get, you know, our young people started on a new path. Because I don't like seeing our young people lost and not knowing where they want to go and just kind of floating through there. And just, you know, they have, you know, all these credentials, all these degrees or whatever. And it's just like, you know, I'm just going to go get a regular job. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's like, I know you're called to be something greater. You just haven't unpacked everything. And I want to help them at least get started on that unpacking. And so I'll offer that to your audience if they just reach out to me through my email.
Wow. Thank you. That is so generous of you, Amar. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for sharing your story and opening up all the things that you've been through and your passion to help others. It is refreshing. And I just thank you for sharing that with us today.
You know, thank you for having me on, Danielle. I never take for granted the opportunity to be able to share the goodness that we're blessed with, and to be able to open up and you to give me a platform to speak candidly and openly about the things that have gone on in my life and are still going on is a beautiful thing. And I'm grateful for the presence in this moment because it's the only time this happens. This is where we are right now. This time will never be again. And so you investing that in me and my story, I'm truly grateful for, and I'm thankful that you had me on during this time.
And listeners, thank you for being with us today. Reach out to Amard, take that 30-minute discovery session so you can get going in your life. And always remember that I love you. Mwah. Until next time, bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Victorious Souls Podcast. You matter and you are loved. We'd love to connect with you further, so please visit us at danielleburnock.com and grab a copy of Danielle's free audiobook. And remember, only you can change your life. No one can do it for you.